Today is Monday, May 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. president has invited the president of the Philippines to the White House, raising the question of why from many quarters, including the United Nations.
My hope is that the president of the United States will convey this deep sense of alarm.
Also ahead, today is May Day around the world. We'll tell you what's happening, and you'll hear the story of a family of refugees in the United States who have regained control of their future. All on today's International Edition. The head of the U.S. CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, Mike Pompeo, is in Seoul, South Korea, for talks with South Korean intelligence officials as top U.S. officials continue to express deep concerns about North Korea's nuclear weapons development program. Pompeo arrived in the South Korean capital over the weekend and met with the head of the National Intelligence Service there and high-level presidential aides. The meetings occurred hours before Pyongyang declared Monday that in the face of new U.S. pressure for U.N. sanctions against North Korea, it would speed up its nuclear deterrence at the maximum pace. North Korea conducted another missile test Saturday, another in a string of launches that South Korea and that U.S. officials say was a failure. Pyongyang is looking to develop a long-range missile, one that could carry a nuclear warhead 9,000 kilometers to the U.S. mainland. U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said Sunday it would adhere to its agreement with South Korea to shoulder the cost of a new missile defense system that's being installed in the face of the North Korean threat. But McMaster said the U.S. is also looking for Seoul to share the cost in the future. Also, the U.S. aircraft carrier strike group headed by the USS Carl Vinson is in nearby waters off the Korean Peninsula, dispatched there by President Trump as a warning signal against North Korea. The U.S. has reached out to several Asian countries in an effort to pressure North Korea to give up that banned nuclear and missile programs. President Trump Sunday spoke by phone with the prime ministers of Singapore and Thailand. A day after talking with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, he invited all three to the White House. A spokesman at the White House described the conversation Saturday between the Philippine and U.S. presidents as very friendly and said the alliance is now heading in a very positive direction. However, the White House invitation, said Mr. Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, on U.S. television Sunday, was not to be seen as an endorsement of Mr. Duterte's rights record on his war on drugs.
It's really a matter of a potential for nuclear and massive destruction in Asia and the potential, at least according to North Korea, of developing an ICBM that could, at some point down the line, if we do nothing, potentially reach the United States. This is a different level of a problem that we need cooperation among our partners in Southeast Asia. It doesn't mean that human rights don't matter, but what it does mean is that the issues facing us developing out of North Korea are so serious that we need cooperation at some level with as many partners in the area as we can get.
Bilateral relations soured since Mr. Duterte took office last June when the Obama administration criticized Manila over its lack of respect for the rule of law in its pursuit of drug dealers, a campaign that has killed thousands of people. Today, UN Human Rights Commissioner Zeid Tad Al Hussein expressed his hope that President Trump would bring up human rights issues when he meets with the Philippine leader.
In terms of the invitation to the White House, my hope is that the President of the United States will convey this deep sense of alarm about the apparent shirking of the obligations under law to subject any alleged violator of the law to the normal process that should be undertaken. So we will wait to see what comes out of that meeting, but I hope the message will be very clear and firm on this.
VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with the East-West Institute senior fellow Gerard Finan, and he told Victor that relations have improved in recent months between the U.S. and the Philippines, and that, he said, could yield three important benefits.
it's important always to keep high-level channels of communication open with our alliance or treaty partners, of which the Philippines is one. The second potentially positive dimension of this story is that thus far, U.S. efforts to encourage Mr. Duterte to respect the rule of law in the Philippines and respect international norms for human rights have been highly unsuccessful. And as many people know, more than 3,000 people have died during the period of time when Mr. Duterte has been in office. This visit, when it takes place, will give Mr. Trump an opportunity to convey to Mr. Duterte the same message that he sent to President Bashar al-Assad of Syria about indiscriminately killing civilian populations. And if Mr. Trump so chooses, it's possible for him to be a positive and moderating influence on Mr. Duterte. The third element of the communication, I think, is that Mr. Duterte has previously spent very little, if any, time in the U.S. So one hopes that his visit will be a chance to observe our society, to interact with Americans, and come to understand that even though we have our own drug problems, drug treatment works and is preferable to the policy he's currently pursuing, which has resulted in the deaths of thousands of Filipinos.
Well, Mr. Trump has spoken with leaders of Japan and South Korea, of course, a number of times, but he's also reaching out to the leaders of Thailand and Singapore. Is the U.S. lining up a large coalition to present a united front against North Korea?
It's a little bit too early to tell for sure, but the fact that the Trump administration is reaching out, having important conversations, and attempting to keep the lines of communication open among some of our strongest partners in the region is something that I think is a positive development.
Does Mr. Duterte remain popular in the Philippines despite what's going on with regard to the drug program?
I believe that his popularity has declined a bit as people come to see that human rights are something that need to be respected and the rule of law is something that needs to be followed. Although initially he was quite popular, I think there has been some decline in recent months.
That's Gerard Finnan. He said the war on drugs appeared to moderate following the death in October of the South Korean businessman Ji-Yuk Ju at National Police Headquarters in Manila. But since then, the pace of that war has intensified. He said there's still a long way to go before the rule of law is respected in the Philippines and people get a fair trial. Let's check in with what's happening on social media now. Andrew Palczewski joins us, as always, on the program. And what's trending today?
Well, it's always odd when you see an old phrase or something historical trending. And today it was the Civil War. A lot of people wondering, why is the Civil War trending?
Civil War?
Civil War was trending.
Why is the Civil War trending,
we ask ourselves. Well, in an interview with the Washington Examiner newspaper on the occasion of his first 100 days in office, President Trump said that if President Andrew Jackson was born later, there wouldn't have been the U.S. Civil War, which, of course, is the 1860s battle between the North and South over the South's secession from the Union, partially to preserve slavery. And President Trump goes on to say, people don't realize, you know, the Civil War, if you think about it, why? People don't ask that question, but why was there the Civil War? Why could that one not have been worked out? So a couple of issues that people are taking with this. First of all, he mentions Andrew Jackson, how he could have solved the Civil War. Andrew Jackson died in 1845, and the Civil War didn't start until 1861. So a lot of people pointing that out on social media. And then a lot of people questioning why he says he doesn't know the Civil War started. He seems to say that he doesn't know what happened in the Civil War. So even the Associated Press called the claim puzzling. Many people taking to social media, especially African Americans, answering that question, saying it was so they could fight to try to end slavery and gain freedom and keep the country together. And just a lot of disbelief that President Trump seemingly does not know this key part of American history. Now, there hasn't been any statement from the White House yet about this, but I wouldn't be surprised if we do see some response, perhaps on President Trump's Twitter, in the coming hours or days.
Yeah, and quickly, it's May Day around the world.
It is, and we're going to hear a bit about that from Luis Ramirez coming up. But today in the U.S., it's not usually a big holiday in the U.S. to celebrate workers as it is around the world, but in the U.S. today, there are a lot of protests, a lot of immigrant protests, especially in light of the Trump administration coming into power, a lot of people marching throughout the country today to celebrate workers' rights and immigrant rights. So a lot of images and video from that swirling around social media today.
And President Trump has said something about that, adopting his own definition of the day and calling it Loyalty Day.
Well,
Andrew Palczewski with us here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency chief is in Seoul for talks with South Korean intelligence officials. The White House defends President Trump's invitation to his Philippine counterpart to visit Washington. Protesters around the world have marked International Workers' Day, May Day, with rallies and demonstration that turned violent in some displays of anger against authoritarianism and right-wing politics from France to Turkey. The Indian Army accuses Pakistani forces of killing two of its soldiers and mutilating their bodies along the border in the disputed Kashmir region. The region, rather, and a U.S. government agency says the Taliban-led insurgency in Afghanistan has continued to inflict shockingly high casualties on government forces. More coverage on these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Here's some troubling news for people who have anything but type O blood. According to a new study, if your blood type happens to be either type A, B, or AB, you're at a higher risk of a heart attack. The study's findings are based on an analysis of reports of cardiovascular events such as heart attack, coronary artery disease, ischemic heart disease, and heart failure. The reports were divided into two groups, those with type O blood and those with other blood group types. The study found that odds of non-O blood type carriers experiencing all types of coronary events were significantly higher than the group with type O blood. But the analysis also reveals that when it came to fatal coronary events, there was no significant difference between people with type O and non-O blood groups. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Today is May Day, known around the world as the day when workers and activists march in the streets and gather in city centers to honor laborers across the globe. Holidays also known as International Workers' Day and as Labor Day. Luis Ramirez, VOA's European correspondent, joins us from London. What is being celebrated? What is being observed? And how is it being observed around the world as you see it?
Well, May Day is a day when people protest. That's pretty much the biggest activity that takes place on this day in many places around the world, certainly here in Europe. We've seen on this May Day a string of protests, some of them violent, stretching from Turkey all the way to France. There were some clashes here in London with demonstrators, but perhaps the worst ones were in Turkey, where police fired tear gas on demonstrators who were trying to hold a rally at Taksim Square in Istanbul. And, some people might remember that Taksim Square was in 1977 the scene of a terrible massacre that killed somewhere between 34 and 42 people.
The holiday, do you call it a holiday, first of all? Is it termed a holiday?
Well, certainly it is a public holiday in many of the nations of Europe, and so banks are closed and schools don't open on this day. So it is a day that is taken very seriously.
Not here in the United States. Can you explain why?
Well, in the United States, there is a day dedicated to labor unions, to workers across the country, and that is Labor Day. It's a movable day. But there was an attempt to make a distinction between a day that was very traditionally celebrated or marked in communist countries. May Day is huge in Russia, even to this day, but it dates back to the Soviet era, when it could be argued that it was the biggest day on their official calendar.
Any other locales beside Turkey experiencing difficulties throughout this day?
Well, one very notable flashpoint is France. Here we are, less than a week away from very divisive presidential elections, and some of the issues that are dear to people on the left who would be out on May Day are very much at the forefront of this election. We're talking about immigration. We're talking about factory jobs. And, it's funny because the candidate that is promising to protect those factory jobs is Marine Le Pen. She's anti-immigration, wants to see France out of the EU, wants to cut most immigration, especially from Muslim countries. countries. And she is happens to be the target of many of these demonstrations. Now, she was out campaigning in force on May Day. There were some clashes on the streets of Paris. Police had to go in, fire tear gas. There was some rock throwing, fire bombs. So a rather violent day on the streets of Paris.
Luis, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is VOA.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the latest political developments in Zambia. Will President Edgar Lungu declare a state of emergency after public buildings were torched in attacks? He blames the violence on opposition members protesting the arrest of their leader, Hakainde Hichilema. An in-depth discussion on Zambia on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
As we continue on International Edition, lawmakers today unveiled a huge $1 trillion plus spending bill that would fund most government operations through September, but would deny President Trump money for a border wall, and it rejects his proposed cuts to some popular domestic programs. The bill, which is 1,665 pages long, agreed to on Sunday, is the product of weeks of talks. It was made public in the pre-dawn hours Monday and is tentatively scheduled for a House vote on Wednesday. The catch-all spending bill would be the first major piece of bipartisan legislation to advance during Trump's short tenure in the White House. While losing on funding for the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, the U.S. president did win a $15 billion down payment on his request to strengthen the U.S. military, although that too fell short of what he had requested. Vice President Mike Pence said the administration couldn't be more pleased, and he noted that it would include a boost in military spending, a down payment on border security, and provide money for health benefits for coal miners. The measure funds the remainder of the 2017 budget year through September 30th, rejecting cuts to popular domestic programs targeted by Trump, such as medical research, the Environmental Protection Agency, and infrastructure grants. Trump said at nearly every campaign stop last year that Mexico would pay for the 2,000-mile border wall. Once they acclimate to their new environment, overcoming language, social, and cultural barriers, refugees in the United States often thrive and regain control of their future. Some translate their past experiences into assets that are valuable to the new community, like Parvin and Yodola Jamar Reza. VOA's June So visited their popular tailoring shop in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Parveen Jamalreza and her husband, Yadola, own a tailoring shop called Yadi's Alteration in downtown Charlottesville.
We just bring two suitcases. When we came to United States, we just brought some clothes, nothing much.
Among the clothes was a pair of scissors.
This is a very old dear to us. We brought from Iran, my husband. By 40 years ago from that guy, he's worked with that maybe 60 or 65 years. It's almost 100 years old that scissor has. And it's really, it still is working well.
11 years ago, the couple was granted refugee status and came to the U.S. with their three children.
So when we came to United States, in the Charlottesville airport, we don't know what we do, but somebody called our name and we were very excited. Oh, okay, somebody knows us.
That somebody was from the International Rescue Committee that helps refugees resettle and find housing. Jamal Reza landed her first job at an alteration shop. She knew what to do even without knowing a word of English.
Because it is my things. It is, I know that, you know. I worked for my, in my country, actually, like, before I came here, about 25 years. I'm working, making clothes. That's what makes me more happy, to find exactly what I have a skill with that.
She didn't stay at the job long. 2 years later, the couple opened their own business and ever since has provided services to the community that few Americans are able to do now. Parveen says she's good with clothes and that her husband is good with leather, especially using this 150-year-old antique sewing machine powered by foot treadle rather than electricity.
Actually, we find in the internet, in the eBay, and we put the bid and we won, and we got that.
In the beginning, the Jamal Rezas did quite a bit of advertising, but they have long since stopped.
This was actually my first time. One of my friends who has lived here forever, they came heavily recommended. So I figured I'd go on his word, and he's always had great work done here. And so, especially with what I picked up today, I'm very, very happy.
I am feel successful about where I am now because I'm really working hard. Where our business now is really good. I make people happy, and people make me happy.
The Jamal Rezas bought their own house 4 years ago, and all their children finished college and have jobs now. The family loves living in Charlottesville.
People here are very friendly, very kind, and very generous. I never feel like I'm a refugee. No, never. I am proud to be a member of this community.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Charlottesville, Virginia.
That'll wrap up our program for today. This is International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Dan Crafton. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Australia are partners in security, bound together by a historic alliance, said Vice President Mike Pence on his recent visit there. The military relationship between the two nations stretches back for generations. Even now, Americans and Australians serve together, including in Afghanistan and in the fight against ISIS. And around the world, we are deepening our defense collaboration, said Vice President Pence. In recent years, the United States and Australia have stepped up intelligence sharing, increased emphasis on shared cyber capabilities, and have conducted and will continue to conduct joint military exercises to ensure interoperability and readiness. Vice President Pence affirmed that the United States and Australia are committed to upholding a rules-based system that is the foundation of peace and prosperity in the Asia-Pacific. In the South China Sea and throughout the region, both nations will defend the fundamental freedoms of navigation and overflight, ensure the unimpeded flow of lawful commerce, and promote dialogue to address issues of regional and global concern. And the United States and Australia will continue to stand united in confronting the most urgent and dangerous threat to peace and security in the Asia-Pacific, the regime in North Korea. While all options are on the table, said Mr. Pence, the United States will continue to work closely with Australia, our other allies in the region, and with China to bring economic and diplomatic pressure to bear on the regime in Pyongyang until they abandon their nuclear and ballistic missile programs. The U.S. has great confidence that China will properly deal with North Korea. But, as President Trump made clear, if China is unable to deal with North Korea, the United States and its allies will. We go forward with faith in our shared values, said Vice President Pence, and faith that the best days for America and for Australia are yet to come.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.